Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
We started BT talking about the Masters. I think we should do both here because now with this news of Judge being named captain of the World Baseball Classic, it's going to be a big deal. Some fans, I'm sure, are going to love it. Some fans maybe be nervous about what could potentially go wrong there for Judge. At least that's where I'm at with that. I see Judge and I'm thinking injury. You don't want that to happen as Mets fans lived, unfortunately, with Edwin Diaz. But started the show talking about Rory and his accomplishment. And for me, it just was not a... I didn't think it was masterful. And that's the word Jim Nantz used to describe it. Rory has his masterpiece. Yeah, he wins the Masters. I get the play on words. Understood. He had his worst round of the tournament shooting that 73. He almost choked it away multiple times. Now, in the end, he got the job done. But for me... it took something away for the casual fan watching that on Championship Sunday. It took something away from me being that it wasn't a dominant win or really an ultra competitive between him and, say, DeChambeau going neck and neck the whole day.
Do you remember some of Phil's massive meltdowns? I mean, the wing foot when he goes driver off the 18th and Ogilvy backdoors. All Phil needed was a bogey. He gets a double bogey. This was 05 or 06. Right. You remember some of those many meltdowns that Phil could not get through. And then he finally won at Augusta. He had that very unathletic jump where he got about an inch off the ground. We all remember that. I think it was the cover of SI. And then Phil wound up being a beast and having a bunch of majors. It's interesting because to me, the human level and the fallibility of Phil was always on display and we gravitated to that. That was a storyline that sucked us in. But yet we got it yesterday with Rory, and it didn't suck you in.
Well, he had the lead on 18. I mean, forget even the stuff before where it wasn't a great round. We know what he did on the first hole. But he had the lead on 18, and I'm following along. And like I said, Nantz is making it all about Rory, to your point, before we understand that's the main story. And then he misses that putt that could have won him the green jacket there, forcing the playoff. So, and I don't think that made it any more rewarding. For me, it was almost like, you shouldn't have taken that extra round or the extra hole to win your championship. So I'm not trying to minimize his accomplishment. I'm just saying for a casual fan, while I got into the storyline and the competition of it, it wasn't to me as great as they were trying to make it feel.
I got you. To me, it was a different level of greatness because you missed that putt. Now you know you're going to a 19th hole here. The baggage that you brought with you onto the first tee to start the morning as you tried to get the career slam and, make amends for the previous Masters implosions, but really the main one. Imagine what it was like. It's one thing to step on the tee box at whatever time, one, two, whatever it was, knowing all that. And now you're carrying that, plus you just missed a putt. And now you got to go against a world-class player. Like, did you think that he was going to rally there?
Yeah, I mean, I never felt... I guess I was just watching without really thinking it through, but I felt like he was still the favorite here. Let me ask you it this way. Do you think that Rory stared down his demons and put to rest any doubt about, his issues?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
See, that's where we definitely disagree then, because I do not. I think even with the win... and obviously getting the win is a huge monkey off the back. All that stuff, that was the one accomplishment he needed to achieve. He did. But even with that, I still think all those demons reared their ugly heads, maybe outside of the playoff hole. against Rose there in 19, where he had, you know, tremendous shots and out did Rose in that final shot on you know, whatever, the 19th.
Yep.
So to me, I still think that they're there. I mean, I saw the Demons on the 18th hole before we finished up, before that playoff hole. You saw the Demons rear their head.
Well, I don't mean this to be an irresponsible analogy, but it just popped into my head, so I'm going to go with it. And if it's off color and off base, I apologize in advance. I don't think it is. It's not off color. It's not a joke. It's just a reference point that a lot of people deal with in our world. Let's say you're an addict. You're a pill addict, okay? And you want to quit. And every time, you know, you're looking in that mirror and you want to do it, but yet you grab the pill bottle, and even though you hate yourself for doing it, you take another one. And you're still deep into your lack of sobriety, if you will, right? Well, eventually there comes and you haven't flushed the demons down the chute because you still acquiesce to those demons by taking the pill. Eventually, and God willing, you're able to do this if this is a real affliction. When you grab that pill bottle, you might have it in your hand and inches from your tongue, but you don't take it. And to me, when you do that, and then you stay away from it, when you do that, you have conquered your demons. So to me, it's less important how the demons resurfaced several times for Rory late. The fact that he was able to put down the bottle, for a very horrendous analogy.
Yeah.
He did conquer them when it mattered.
And to win a Grand Slam. Maybe that is the thing that is missing, at least from my perspective, where it was about the Masters and just yesterday's performance or yesterday's round. The greater accomplishment is becoming the sixth golfer all time.
Oh, my goodness.
To win the Grand Slam. So that, if you take away how it happened, if we could argue about that, but there is no disputing that, where, you know, nobody since Tiger was able to achieve that. That is a tremendous goal, no doubt about it, for Rory McIlroy. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Andrew is in Shelton. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Good conversation today.
Thank you.
And you just threw me a massive curveball as a guy with 13 years in recovery. I'm listening here and you start talking about pills, and it's funny. I was thinking about calling originally about the play on words, and then you mentioned that. That had to be scripted, and I'm glad it was. It's a brilliant play on words by Jimmy Nance to say it's his master's piece. He finally got his masterpiece. You know, that last piece, and then to touch on it like you just did, that, you know, he's one of six human beings to create that feat, to do the Grand Slam. That's special. You know, you're thinking back to his shot on 15 on Sunday. You're thinking back to, you know, going into a playoff, though he missed the putt on 18, to come back again and put the shot within Rose and then sink the putt. That man absolutely conquered his demons. And what he does from here is not as important as his immortality, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. He can add to it. He can't subtract from it, is what I'm saying. And it sounds like he's saying the same thing. And by the way, great job on sobriety, 13 years. Yeah, I mean, you could. Now, there's another level to go. Said this before, like, if he wins the U.S. Open, if he dominates the Ryder Cup, well, I mean, there's going to be more moments, more snapshots of glory for Rory. But if there's not, I mean, this man is on as revered a list as you could possibly assemble in golf.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what happens from here. What if he does have another opportunity to win another major and chokes it away? You know, you could never take away the Grand Slam from him, of course, but maybe his legacy will be one that of he should have been better, he could have been more, but he cost himself a couple of times. I don't know. I still think there is another level.
So you view him as a choker? You really, that's how you view him?
I don't think yesterday's round gave me confidence that he put the choking behind him. Look at how he played in the whole tournament. You heard the calls, even the calls in support of saying, oh, it was beautiful, it was a masterpiece, aside from the greens. Yeah, aside from his putting. Well, so then no, I don't think that he's put that to bed.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking up this list because I didn't want to forget anybody. And some I know their stories really well. Others I don't remember.
Right.
So I just typed in biggest golf chokers in history, right? And not for a specific round, but
first guy that comes to mind for me is Greg Norman.
Well, it's funny. They go in descending order. 10 was number is Phil Mickelson.
Okay.
All right, and we all know Colin Montgomery's number 9. I remember that's when I started watching golf. Colin was always top 10, top 5, number 2, number maybe not number 2, but, you know, a world-class player, and he would just melt at the sight of Tiger and a few others. Kenny Perry, whatever. I remember him, but not as much. All right, don't know that name. Scott Hoke, whatever. Don't know a ton about him. Yeah, I mean, Retief Goossens had some moments. They do a Ryder Cup with the European team. Jean Vandeveld with the Open Championship. That was a more of a one event. Greg Norman's number one. Yes.
Yeah.
Greg Norman's number one. So, you know, I don't look at Rory as, and I know he has had some moments where, I would use the word more, he's imploded more than choked.
Is Rory on the list?
He's not.
Okay.
No, and nor do I. I didn't think that he was. I just wanted some confirmation from people who cover the sport for a living.
Well, I mean, he's won. You know, he's won the Grand Slam here. So how much of a choker could he be?
Yeah. I mean, did Tiger ever choke? Did Jack ever choke? Did Gene Sarazen or any of these old-timers ever choke? I'm sure there's an element of choking that crept into their games. I think what's more impressive is, I can't imagine what's going through this guy's head when he, man, when he steps up to that putt or when he steps up to tee number one to start the round or when he goes to the to play the 19th hole. I mean, his brain must have been mush. And if he would have dropped a sixth there, he would have had a lot of reasons where you could explain that away. But, man, he got steady hands, but I thought his hands would be loose.
Chris is calling from Bayville. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I just wanted to say, I don't play golf. I've never watched golf, but I could not shut that off yesterday. I thought, I mean, I learned from the broadcast about McIlroy's, you know, imploding. So I didn't know that until yesterday, but I thought the competition was, like, great and how it could turn on a dime. I couldn't stop watching it.
Now, do you remember, Chris, at all, Tiger and Phil and that competition?
I never watched.
Right.
So
okay.
I feel like I want to play. Yeah. I want to play now.
And look, maybe you get the bug now after watching that. I can understand that, but I guess somebody like me who's lived through, in my mind at least, a higher level of competition, maybe that was part of it. I wanted to get sucked back in yesterday for that. I was not feeling the ultimate drama. I was not feeling that connection. And I've done this before as even parachuting in, so it's not just that I was parachuting in. I just did not feel that great accomplishment or great connection or achievement. I don't know if it was in part because of the way that it ended, because of his final round, the putt on 18, the missed putt on 18, and maybe not having another big-time name to go against. There are a lot of different factors, but I just wasn't feeling it the way that I have others over the years.
You think we fixate more on golf than others? Like, just because there's so much time to go as they're going through the shots and going through the round and setting things up, you can't help but conjure up these images and these stories from years past. I mean, let's take the Knicks. All right, it's going to be a big Knicks week here on the station. Game one is obviously coming up over the weekend against the Pit. I think it's going to be a tough series. We'll get into it more. But let's say Jalen Brunson scores 43 points in game seven, but he misses his last, you know, four shots, and OG bails him out, and Bridges sticks a layup, and Brunson is not consequential during at the end of the game. But is 43 put them in a position to win? Do we subtract over the, like, years later? Do we say, man, that 40 burger was amazing? But, and I'm saying the Knicks win. But Jalen came up small down the strip. Like, I don't know, but we tend to do that with golf. I think golf's failures are more identifiable because it's just one person.
I was going to say, because it's individual based. So in that example that you gave, Brunson would have had a terrific game, but just at the end of the game, maybe didn't get the job done. Where this is different. If Rory had the equivalent of
Rory didn't have a terrific game,
right?
But he got the job done.
Well, but
he got the job. He won.
That's my point. If Rory had the equivalent of a 43-point game, maybe I'd be looking at it a little bit differently. As opposed, I know the result was there, but the performance to me was, it was an all-time accomplishment, an achievement.
Yep.
No, like, nobody could dispute that. Was it an all-time round of golf, an all-time close?
No, I can't argue with that.
Put it this way, yeah, because you've had people calling up saying it was the best Masters they've ever seen.
Some people said that.
Which I respect them. A 63-year-old saying he's watched everyone. Okay, if this were not to culminate a Grand Slam, would it be such a great...
No. Unless it was like his first or... You know, when you get, and there's different layers, which X amount of guys have two majors, then fewer have three and four. No, I think I would probably agree with that.
That's kind of my point. If it were just in isolation, not a part of the Grand Slam, I don't know if it would be this big a deal. Tom is calling from Long Island. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Dylan. Hey. I was going to say, what I found most compelling about yesterday was that it was just so atypical of what we typically see when we do tune into these guys. I mean, they're just so automatic. And that when typically when you see these guys that get a lead, they begrudgingly give it up. And there's very little movement on the leaderboard downward. It's usually, in, you know, getting better and incremental birdies as they go along. So I think, you know, that the human element, that they look so human. And who among us hasn't dumped one in the creek on an easy layup chip like that, you know? And and that, I think, made me, you know, tune in and stay with it. And on the CBS coverage, you know, Nance, I think, was a little bit more syrupy sweet than he typically is. But, you know, the one thing they did do well was Rory's walk up the hill after he did win. They didn't say a word, thank God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all you saw was his face and all his emotion, and I thought that was fabulous.
He did lay out for that one. Thank you for the call,
Tom.
He's
probably killing him that he had to lay out.
You know, it does make me think, BT, the way that golf fans watch golf is different from the way that any other fan watches whatever other sport it may be. And that is a part of what drives me nuts,
I think. In what way, though? Like, I don't disagree, but how is it different?
That it's that you're, not you, but the golf fan is watching it saying, like, oh, like, relatable. Everybody plays golf. Everybody's going out on course.
Yeah.
Everybody's hit that shot. Whereas you're watching football and very few people have played the sport.
Yep.
And you know, even if you played baseball in Little League or whatever levels you got to, it's still, you're not watching it saying, oh, I would have done that or this.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball, we've all picked up a basketball and shot some hoops, but you're still not watching it saying, oh, well, I did this. Your golf fans, people who play golf and that watch golf, try to relate it to their own crappy game, and it drives me up a wall.
See, I love that part about it.
Yeah, well, I think that's what's relatable.
I think that's actually a really good point. I do think, and it's ironic in the sense that golf, nobody is more exclusive than golf.
Correct.
No, you can't join my country club. No, we don't take your kind here. No, we won't allow you to play. But yeah, you can watch us, and you can all relate to you chunking a wedge greenside or sculling something into the river or just banging something on the highway because you snap hooked it. Yeah, that is. I think that's really the best part of watching golf, really, because I don't sit there and watch the Knicks and say, oh, man, if I was Jalen isolated 23 feet away from the rim, I would have done this.
Even though you played basketball at a higher level.
I mean, maybe I say that a little more in baseball, but not even football. I don't say it. In golf, you do. There is an immediate connection and connectivity to when we grab something out of our bag, even if it's a cut, because we don't have caddies. I mean, you could, but I don't play with caddies. I don't like playing with caddies. I'm embarrassed to play with caddies, quite frankly. But, like, I will talk with my buddies. Hey, you like the five here? You like the six? Eh, a little downwind. Yeah, I'm hitting the ball this. What do you think? And, like, so that's kind of the approximation of what they do when they confer with their caddy, incorporating the wind and the slope and the slant and the this and the that. You can't get that from any other sport. And it's enjoyable, it is intense, and it is intimate. And it's a good thing.
BT and Sal on the Fan, and Mark is calling from Syosset. What's up, Mark?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
In terms of yesterday, it was resilience by Rory. He's had those implosions. He showed this time he wasn't going to let it get to him. And he played an up-and-down round, no question. He had shots that were absolutely brilliant. But in terms of the fans, Sal, I think the thing is, you had three golfers 10 under with four holes left to play. The suspense was there, and it was the suspense of whether Rory was going to make or miss. That's what made it a great Masters. It was the unknown every shot, and it was enjoyable to watch. And you're watching him miss putts, yes, but then you watch him on the 15th make that shot that was bending it around the tree, which is something when you're playing golf, you go, how'd he do that?
I know.
It was fantastic to watch.
Yes.
How about the unknown, Mark?
It was fantastic to watch.
But how about, you say unknown, how about the known of knowing what Rose was already in the clubhouse with?
Well, yeah, but that's added pressure for Rory. And
that's
that,
what I said to
certainly
you.
Was a problem.
See, I like
if
it.
You watch Rose.
Go ahead.
That putt on the 18th hole by Rose, that was a moment. You want to root for the guy, but you're sitting there watching Rory, hoping he doesn't, you know, tank. And it was it was really enjoyable to watch. It was fun to watch. And at the end of that, you were absolutely right. Man saying nothing was the best thing he could have done.
And thank you for the call, Mark. I mean, look, put it this way. I was into it. I was watching it. I just didn't get that feeling of, wow, this is some great thing. Maybe it was in part because of the broadcast shoving him down my throat. Maybe it was in part because Rose, the biggest threat, was already in the clubhouse and there wasn't that back and forth. Okay, let's switch over to see what Rose is doing on 17 or whatever. Or they weren't playing together, so maybe that was lacking in my mind. Maybe it was that Rory didn't have a great round, whether it's hole one, whether it's the missed putt on 18. There were a lot of different factors or examples that I could give you here. I'm not saying it wasn't at least entertaining, especially for the casual fan, because I was watching it and I didn't want to leave. I could have shut it off or paused it and went back. I wanted to stick with the drama, but it just wasn't. Put it this way. I've experienced more as a golf fan than that yesterday.
I don't think you're alone in that regard, but to me, and we definitely disagree on this, the element of posting versus not having posted yet. When there's already somebody in the clubhouse with score X, to me, and you're Rory, the only way that you can win is by doing better. Like, you have to do better. When a guy hasn't yet posted, you have two ways to win. You can do better than him, or he can implode. So in a lot of ways, it's the pressure to me is there's less options. There's fewer options.
How about the unknown element, though, from a fan's perspective watching it? See, I still think that there could be more pressure if he's looking at the scoreboard and seeing, or you're looking at the leaderboard and seeing somebody else putting the pressure on you.
Yeah, those are two different things. I'll give you that. Those are two different things.
From a fan's perspective, don't you think it's more entertaining to not have somebody already in the clubhouse?
Yeah.
It could be
from,
either way.
From just the sheer theater going down the stretch, like when you're tied.
What's he going to do on 17 versus what Rory's going to do on 17? Okay, here we go to 18.
Guy blisters one in the fairway, the next guy's in the rough. You're like, all right, when we come back, you know, so-and-so try to chop it out of the rough. We'll see what he can do.
Right, right.
You know, and obviously you follow golf. You know that if you're in the rough, you can't quite get the spin that you need like these guys do to obviously stick it on the ground on a green as slick as the Masters. So, yeah, when you see that literal, you know, I go, you go, I think it's more palpable. I think I'm processing it more because I'm so into Rory's story with the implosions prior that I think there was more pressure on him knowing that he was done rather than almost, it would be easier to look him in the eye and stare him down and know whatever he did, I got to do better. Maybe Rory would disagree. I don't know. But as I'm watching this, I'm like, Rory, you know, he's in. You mess up once more, it's over.
BT and Sal on the Fan. More your calls when we come back. We brought up the WBC with Aaron Judge. We could get into that. Also, some news, BT, in the NFL that might impact the draft potentially in the quarterback situation. We could get to that as well. 888-808-1019.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It's Al on the Fan. Seems like Derek Carr is dealing with a significant injury, one that might keep him out the entire year, which could certainly impact what the Saints do. And the reason why that's relevant is the idea that, now I don't know if the Saints, who they're going to take. Right, we've seen mock drafts with Jackson Dart. Now some people are saying maybe Shedeur Sanders because they're going to need a quarterback. Saints have been interested in a quarterback. We knew that anyway. But if Carr's going to be out for the year, I don't know if they're going to draft somebody and have them start right away. Does this put them in play for a free agent or making a trade? Who knows? But the idea that the Giants would trade back in and potentially get one of those guys, I would not think that that's going to be easy if you know that New Orleans is going to take a quarterback. You look at Pittsburgh, a quarterback needy team, and I would think that at least those two, maybe others, would be looking to take quarterbacks off the board. So the perfect scenario for the Giants, if they want to take Carter, let's say at three, and trading back up, I don't think that's as easy as everybody makes it seem.
I even saw something nuts that I've got to dig a little bit more, and I think Samini had it, where the Jets are suddenly enamored with Shuck and they could take him at seven.
Come on.
This is where we are.
I didn't see that.
Click,
who had
click,
that?
Click, click, click. Everybody just click away. You know, you're going to get this before any draft. I mean, somebody's rising, somebody's dropping. This team's looking to do this. It's fun. It's interesting. Generally, it doesn't lead to too many places. But specific to your point about the Saints, I think what they're doing right now, they are absolutely preparing for life without Derek Carr this year. I don't think he's playing.
Okay.
I don't think he's playing for, and if he plays, he ain't playing for a while. So they have to get a quarterback. And I believe, but even before, I remember saying that there was a chance that Sanders, this goes back a month where you and I started getting into this, where I thought that Shedeur Sanders, there was a chance, and this was plotting it out specific to the Giants, obviously, but going back 4 or 5 weeks, I'm like, you know, if this happens and that happens, don't be surprised if Sanders maybe falls to the Saints at nine, and now this probably even further complicates the Giants' world because he's hurt. And, you know, you got the Sanders stuff and other guys are rising. I don't think the Jets will take a quarterback, but your point about the Giants not being able to get somebody maybe as easy as they thought, very well might be coming to fruition. This does not help them.
Well, what about possibility of now maybe the Saints trading up? And or other teams saying, okay, well, the Saints for sure are going to take a quarterback. Maybe they want this guy. Maybe teams trying to trade up in front of them, and that could impact the Jets. Maybe somebody leapfrogs the Saints and the Panthers to get to the Jets spot to take a quarterback. Let's say, whatever, let's say Pittsburgh, just to throw it out there. They love Shedeur Sanders, and they don't want to take a risk of Shedeur getting to
21.
To the
Saints, really.
Bingo,
not,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Maybe they call the Jets.
I'll tell you what, if the Jets could ever work out a deal with the Steelers to go from, I think they're 21 or 22, to go from where the Steelers are to where the Jets are, I would sign off on that without even knowing the exact parameters.
You just love what you're going to get in return?
Yeah. Dude, it you got to move mountains to go two slots. You're going from the low 20s inside the top 10 to get a quarterback, you are going to fleece the Steelers. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Or I wouldn't think that this would be the case, but if the Giants played their cards maybe a little bit better and gave the threat to your point last week about taking Sanders,
yeah.
Maybe the Saints say, you know what, let's not run the risk. What is it going to take?
Trade with the Giants. Yep.
Now, if they're desperate, which it seems like they want to win anyway, and they might be now, in fact, desperate.
Here's my question. Would the Giants, knowing that all their fans are clamoring for a quarterback here, would the Giants allow the massive or potentially massive PR hit and the court of public opinion amongst Giants fans just being ratcheted up a million miles of hate and discontent if the Giants trade with somebody and they move into the third spot and take a quarterback? You know, you're not going to know if he's great right away, but I think even if that happened, I think Giant fans would go nuts.
Here, unless they took let's just say Jackson Dart.
Unless they got a quarterback at nine. You
correct.
Mean.
Because how
that else, would soften it for sure. Yeah, but that's no guarantee.
And if you didn't take a quarterback, no, there isn't. And if you didn't take a quarterback at nine, how could you justify trading out, not getting, let's say, hypothetically, Abdul Carter, and not getting one of the top quarterbacks? I don't think you can make a case for that. The Giants either have to take Carter or whatever, whoever they think is the best player available at three, and then get another top quarterback at some point, maybe trading back in or not, or just take a quarterback at three. I don't think you could trade out of the third spot, get the ninth best player available,
and not take a quarterback at nine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a tough sell, too. But, like, to me, see, you don't want to think this way because it's almost a loser's mentality. But really, the key to the war room is mitigating failure. It's almost equal. Mitigating failure versus creating home run hits. Like, home run hits are awesome and they elevate you, but avoiding misses early in the draft help you almost as much in a weird, wacky way.
It's like grenades. The minefield. You want to stay away from those potential grenades.
Because then think about second contracts. Yep. And now if you draft somebody 2, 3, 4, 5, you don't get the second contract. What a wasted pick. If you pick the wrong position, like a running back with Saquon with the Giants, there's always that discourse. There's a lot of things at play here. But I think that, the equation that I would rather have, somebody that I think is great in Carter and a quarterback a little later, and I'm going to flip the coin on and say, I'm not really sure, but he's interesting. I take that equation more so than a quarterback who I'm flipping the dice on at three, who I still don't know about, and a lesser player than Abdul Carter at nine.
Yeah, I just think it's fascinating when look, first of all, I love talking about it. I can't wait for the draft here, but now with, it's crazy to think that Sanders, who was once thought to be the top quarterback in the draft, and now Cam Ward, the surefire top pick in the draft. I was reading something else that said it would take a historic package for the Titans to trade out of number one. And Cam Ward doesn't appear to be that historic of a player that you'd be, that'd be worth giving up what it would have to take. But went from Ward and Sanders being the top two to Giant fans thinking they were screwed because they're going to have the third pick and not even have their choice, to now, in all likelihood, they're going to have their choice of Sanders and they're going to pass on him. And hopefully get another quarterback, whoever that may be. I don't know. We haven't identified who the Giants have identified as their top target, but you got to assume that with one of their early picks, they're going to take a stab. They better take a stab at one of these quarterbacks.
You think the door shut on Shador three? Like, that's it? Not happening?
It's just my feel. I
feel
that.
The same thing. Like, but give me a percentage. 75, 80%?
Put it this way, dude. I would be shocked.
Shocked?
Shocked if the Giants took Shador Sanders.
I'd be surprised. I think shocked is too strong for a team that needs a quarterback, and that for most early in the process here, they were connected to him. I don't think they're taking Sanders. I wouldn't take Sanders. I don't think they are.
I'd respect it.
But I can't say shocked.
Yeah, that would be some heavy smokescreen.
If it works out.
Give me the percentage. Would you say your percentage?
I would say right around, I think there's probably about a 70-ish, whatever this is worth, 70, 75% chance they're not. Maybe even 80% they're not taking him.
Okay.
So, like, to me, shock would be 95% and 5%.
I'm probably 5% at this point.
At this point.
I think you're right to have that better percentage. Just my gut is saying there's no way, so I'll give it maybe a 5% chance. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan. Get back to the phones here. Kevin and Clark is calling about the WBC. What's up, Kevin?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I got a quick question for BT, because you're already dealing with the pain of Garrett Cole being down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you think it would have felt if you lost him to the WBC instead of just a spring training injury? Do you think your emotion would have changed?
I mean, I think I would have had certainly more displaced anger, Kev. Thanks for the call. You know what I mean? At least I could blame somebody at that point. You know, I'd go on one of these rants like he went on when Diaz got hurt. Yeah, of course I'd be much more bothered. I would have a target where I can just unleash my venom, even if it's displaced, rather than just the natural understanding of it is a taxing position full of unnatural torque and the most unnatural throwing motion or physical biomechanic move that an athlete can make in throwing a ball overhand. And, at least when you get hurt just doing your job, there you can relate on a sensible level. Like, you don't turn into... You don't look for things to hunt down to blame, which make you feel better in the moment. No, but if he got hurt in the WBC, I would flip out.
Right, so that's the point, is because you never want to see your players get injured. We all know that, okay? That's a given. But if somebody gets hurt in spring training, you can live with it because at least the purpose of the spring training was to get ready for the season. Bleep happens. Like, there's nothing you could do about it. And where does the line get drawn with the WBC? What if Max Fried and Anthony Volpe and Dominguez, Bellinger, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys get invited to go play, and they get hurt, or one or two of them get hurt. Like, it can happen. That's where you have an issue, because it's not about the team or the organization that's paying them hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's about the individual wanting to represent his country in a made-up exhibition tournament.
That's second to me. It's still about greed, first and foremost, primarily. It's about greed.
From baseball.
Of course.
Right, but it's not about greed from the players. I'll give them that credit.
No, I'm not talking about the players. I'm just talking about the entity of baseball and how they monetize it and how they sell out stadiums and they've got TV broad, you know, rights, and they attach a pretty penny to it. No, I actually love that the players do it. You know, I mean, I love and I also don't a little bit, but I do genuinely much more love that they want to be involved in this for their country and that they take great pride. Now, if you're a Yankee or a Mets fan and you're paying ridiculous rates to go and watch the teams play in the Bronx or in Queens and you've $50 for parking and so-and-so is taking the WBC more seriously than the Phillies or than the Orioles, well, we have a major issue with that. And some players actually do. To what extent, I can't prove it. So it's a lot of emotions with the WBC. Generally, anything that, for me, or forget any non-traditional competition for said sport, anytime you could grow a sport, especially like baseball that needs some growth because it's diminished a little bit over the years, I'm all for it. I'm for it for the globalization of the game, but you understand that there are other areas that will be hurt, and you just hope it doesn't happen to you or your team, and when it does, you just go nuts.
And with all that being said, oddly enough, you're probably not even believe I could say this, but I am more intrigued about this WBC than I was prior. Maybe it's because of watching them play at that high level of competition. I love high level of competition. I just don't necessarily care who wins to the way that I would the Mets or Yankees game.
Yeah.
So I'm into the competition. Seeing Judge play for a team other than the Yankees is appealing. I'm sure Soto's going to play in this thing too. But how could you not, as a Mets or Yankees fan, be at least bracing yourself, especially when Mets fans just lived that unfortunate reality a few years ago? How could you not think, like, this is bullcrap that, A, they play harder for this tournament than they do for the regular season of the Mets and Yankees? And B, what if somebody happens to get hurt doing this?
Why is it different than the All-Star game? Outside of the fact that the All-Star game is a one-off. It's one game, but Skeen started last year. Yeah. He comes out, he's pumping 100 miles an hour. You think the Pirates weren't like, all right, man, just get through this one inning and do the symbolism of it and keep this train moving. Like, I'll answer my own question. It's different because the WBC is longer.
Yeah.
And with baseball's All-Star game, you're already in the natural grind of the season. It's not an unnatural ramp-up. So I kind of answer my own thing here, but it's really not that different when you think about it.
Also, one other difference, I think, is guys aren't going balls to the wall anymore in the All-Star game. They used to win
the pitchers are, though. I think the pitchers are. There's no diminishment.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. The Skeens hit 100. I think he's 100, right?
But throwing a fastball versus, I don't know.
They're not throwing 89-mile-per-hour fastballs. Yeah. Like, they're not dialing down. If you have a 95-mile-per-hour fastball, I guarantee that with the whole world watching, these guys, for the one inning that they pitch, they're trying to go 96.
Well, look, to answer your question, there is no difference. If a Met or Yankee got hurt in the All-Star game, we'd be livid. I just feel like there's an element to where these guys lay off a little bit in the All-Star game. Even with the pitchers, I still think that they lay off a little bit, but if somebody got, I wouldn't want my pitcher. You want Max Fried pitching in the All-Star game and firing bullets instead of saving him for the postseason? I mean, if the Mets had a good pitcher, I wouldn't want him in the All-Star game. I don't know who that's going to be.
It's
exactly
a tough one, man. As much as I say, I like watching those guys on the field with the Yankee logo. I do. But don't get hurt.
Yeah. I did not pay much attention to the Knicks game. There was just so much going on. So weekend, number one, you get the baseball, you get the Masters. But did you see Mikal Bridges, the stunt that he pulled to keep his streak intact, as if anybody cares about that? Yeah. He goes into the game, he commits a foul, and then exits after 6 seconds.
You know, believe it or not, I hadn't seen it, and you mentioned something during the break, and I went and I saw it, and come on, man. I mean, I love his durability, and he's played a lot, and he should be lauded for that. He's always been a heavy minute guy, and 82 times. Actually, one year he played 83. That's when he was traded a couple of years ago, so he played an extra game. But he's played 82 or more, 5 of his 7 seasons. He's a guy who laces it up and earns his money. Maybe not as tough as some Knicks fans want, including me. But certainly a guy who's going to be durable and going to be physically reliant. But that is just, like, that's one of the problems with sports. Do it or don't. You know, there's always this manipulation and just, records are sacred. And I understand that there are, I just can't get into this, man. Now, I'm not going to go nuts now, but, like, if he were to break the all-time streak, down the road. Oh, is that A.C. Green? I don't even know who it is. Is it A.C.
Green?
Oh,
A.C. Green.
It might be A.C. He was for a little bit, and then I think he got hurt. Either way, Zoo's looking that up.
He was a virgin, right?
He was. I mean,
I'm assuming was at
this
point.
What kind of dopey are you? You're an NBA superstar. You got groupies in every hotel. You're a virgin.
That's the most impressive streak. That is one streak that will never be broken. I can guarantee you that.
That is true. What's that, Zoo?
It is A.C. Green.
There you go. I think Michael Cage
what's the number?
Flirted with it, whatever it is.
You have the number on that? I'm curious.
How many?
I'm finding the number right now.
Okay.
Yeah, A.C. strapped it on quite a bit.
Well,
sometimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think like there are certain things like if, say, if you're Cal Ripken, and that's a streak we all really care about, and, you know, we've heard the story. I'm sure you heard about it with the Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
You heard the story. Okay, yeah. They manipulated the rain out because something may have happened untoward.
But that's like
marriage,
urban
whatever.
Legend. It might have been. Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard people that I trust denounce it. I've heard people that I know that were on the beat with the Baltimore Sun back in the day say, I believe it's true. Either way, I wasn't there, so I don't know.
And even if it is true, I still think it's more legit than what the stunt that Bridges pulled yesterday.
Well, that's where I'm going. Like, let's say, you know, if Cal... You know, let's say Cal broke his wrist and he literally could not swing a bat. And like but he was 13 games away from breaking Lou Gehrig's mark. And they just kind of trot him out there and he bats lead off and he just holds the bat limply in one hand with the other in a cast and he has no intention of swinging. But, you know, strike one, strike two, strike three, then he goes out and then they do this 12 or 13 times to break the record consecutively. Like, that is a ridiculous, pathetic manipulation. They would never do that. He earned it. So I am always from the school of earning it. Now, I also say, like, it's not like Bridges was hurt. Like, they wanted to rest him. So
okay.
There's a little context there.
But if you played the first quarter, would we be talking about this?
No, that's true. No, we wouldn't be. The way they executed was very minor league Bush.
To your point, either do it or don't.
Yeah.
What you did yesterday was not in the spirit of the streak.
No.
It was bullcrap. It's Bush League. It's disrespectful to the actual streaks that are out there. When do you think this nonsense started? Was it Strahan? The Strahan Favre sack?
With the sack with Gasino.
The first one I remember. And remember, think back to the guys who actually set these records. They weren't manipulating stuff back then. I'm sure, whatever. Whatever their version was of doing things.
They earned it.
Okay, well, right.
That's what I'm saying. They earned
it. I'm sure everybody's got some kind of whatever. But those guys earned it.
I don't think Lou Gehrig has a version that's similar to going out there and manipulating this. I think he just played all those games.
I don't know. Maybe there was a day where he wasn't feeling well. He started the game, but he was pulled after the I don't know.
Yeah.
Along the line of that many games, maybe there was some kind of, but the point is, it was in the spirit of competing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're going to do what Bridges did yesterday, that is, what are we doing? How do you allow a player to go out there? And by the way, in just a game that doesn't mean anything. So imagine the people that paid for tickets, an NBA game that doesn't mean anything. Knicks aren't playing anybody, which is one aspect of it. Fine, resting up for your players. But you're going to have Bridges go in, keep his selfish personal streak alive, which, by the way, he's not even halfway home.
I know.
The record. The record's 1,192. He's at 556 or something. So
that's a number. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, think about that. So I just have a major issue with that. And he's not alone. Reyes, I'm going to work with him at SNY later on.
Oh, Jose.
With the batting title.
Yes.
Bunting
yes.
And then coming out of the game.
Wade Boggs did that. And then when Mattingly and Boggsy were going down to the wire. Matter of fact, I think Wade had a, they kind of said he had a hamstring, and then Mattingly went like 5 for 6 or 7 for 8, something wacky in the mid-80s, and he was basically winning the batting title. And Boggs is like, oh, I'm okay. I got to get up there, try to get it back. And he had a few at-bats. I think my greater issue is with Bridges allowing this to happen. Now, I know it's his first year here, but well, he's got enough equity in the league. All he's got to say to, if Tom Thibodeau I don't think it was Tom Thibodeau's got bigger things to worry about than a first-year Nick, who nobody even really loves, worrying about some stupid streak that's never going to bust the real streak. So I don't think it was Tom Thibodeau saying, all right, let's orchestrate it this way. I think it was probably somebody from the Knicks, the medical team, somebody from PR. Hey, by the way, Tibbs, just so you know, I know you got a lot on your plate with the playoffs here. But, hey, he's got a 500-and-something game consecutive streak. If you want, just so you know, do whatever you want. And then maybe this was the plan that they hatched. And eventually that plan was communicated to Mikal Bridges, who I would believe is the player would have the latitude to sign off or not.
Yeah.
And, that is just Bush. So if I'm Mikal Bridges, I either say, you know what, Coach, I get it. We're not playing until Saturday. Let me play the first quarter.
Yeah.
Let me play the first half. But it's either play a real part of the game or enough of the dog and pony show. I'm not playing a second.
I'm with you. And I would have respected Tibbs more if you were like, I ain't doing this. You either want to play or you're not playing. Like, I get wanting to appease his player. But then say, look, Mikal, I'll give you the option. I want to rest everybody, so I'm going to give you the option. If you want to play and keep your streak intact, you can do so. But then I'm going to play you. Not for the whole game.
Yeah.
But I'm going to play you. Even if it's 8 minutes, whatever it may be. not 6 seconds, commit a foul, and then check out.
You feel good about the Knicks?
I do.
Deeper, I wanted your first reaction.
I do feel good
about
the
Knicks. That's why I asked
you quick. I'm hearing a lot of people that I think are getting worried about this matchup.
You hear that.
Yeah, we could do a deeper dive.
Nobody was worried before me. I know. We got time.
Well, you were worried in general to start the year. Now, here we are.
I was also worried about the Pistons.
Yeah,
it's not a good matchup.
Yeah, I think the Knicks are going to win the series, but we'll have plenty more on that, obviously, in the coming days. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. All right, 888-808-1019. We'll get to some Mets when we come back and continue with your calls on the Masters as well. BT and Sal on the Fan.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.